Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tine.
I am a lineman for the county.
Glenn Campbell made Wichita Lineman famous in 1969, and his recording of it made 19-year-old Jimmy Webb famous, too. The catalog of songs Webb went on to write has in many ways defined American pop music for the past five decades.
From Galveston to All I Know to If These Walls Could Speak, Webb's songs have been covered by many in the pop and rock pantheon. And since the early 90s, Webb has been on the road himself performing his own songs in his own way.
Webb will play at the Pabst Theater on Thursday evening. We had a chance to catch up with him on the phone before that, and he told us where his songs began.
You know, I'm the son of a Baptist minister, and my mother's fondest, wildest dream really was that I would eventually become the pianist at the First Baptist Church, which she perceived as the very pinnacle of show business success. So from age six, I had a very thorough instruction in John Thompson's first, second, third grade piano books. By the time I was 12, I was on the piano bench in the First Baptist Church. And being 12, 13, and 14, the hormones began to run wild. And I suddenly found out that I not only loved music, because up until then I had not been sure, but I found out that I not only loved music, but that the girls in my class loved music, too. And I started actually imitating the songs that I heard on the radio. In those days, we had what's called a follow-up, so a group like Little Anthony and the Imperials would have a song like Hurt So Bad, and then they would follow it up with I Think I'm Going Out of My Head. And I was able to gauge how successfully I was approximating what might be what we called a follow-up record for all the artists. And this was an exercise that I developed on my own. And at a certain point, I thought, I could really be a songwriter. Now, this is just a conclusion I came to on my own. And, of course, it's hardly necessary to say that my father, the minister, was not crazy about this idea.
Or your mother?
Well, no. For a very short time, she had to worry about that. But, unfortunately, my mother passed when I was 16 years old.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I appreciate your condolences, but believe me, it's at this point, that's an old story. She was young. She's quite beautiful. The family really just orbited around her. And so when she left us, my father and a bunch of the kids went back to Oklahoma. We were in California. I stayed because we were in San Bernardino, and I knew that Glenn Campbell lived in Hollywood somewhere. And I was only an hour away from Glenn Campbell, and, there was no way I was going to go any other direction than towards him.
Well, and that is one of the great musical collaborations of American songwriting and performing, you and Glenn Campbell. I mean, his voice is indelibly linked to so many of your songs, Wichita Lineman, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, Galveston. I mean, I was just re-listening to Galveston before I came in the studio, and it breaks my heart.
Well, Glenn had a kind of plaintive quality, a resonance in his voice. He didn't always use it, but on certain songs, he would sort of use this almost a cry in his singing voice that was really one of the distinctive parts of his style, and it seemed to fit these sad songs pretty well. I know that when I was actually connected with Glenn, and that was through another singer called Johnny Rivers, who knew him and had made a record with him. When we were connected, it seemed like all of a sudden, I don't want to be too sentimental about this, but it seemed as though we sort of completed each other in some way. And I like to sing. I like to perform. But I'm no Glenn Campbell. And Glenn was fascinated with songwriting, but didn't write a lot of songs and wasn't really involved in that side of things. He had great ears, and he could hear things that no one else could hear. It was a wonderful arranger, for instance, which he doesn't get credit for. And as you probably know, he had played on thousands of hits. So he had a background of this unparalleled, really, depth to what he could bring to a recording session. So we sort of reached critical mass there in Hollywood in 1967, and he and I came together with his incredible backlog of experience and my inexperience, my utter, you know, almost pathetic teenage angst, you know, and boom, you know, we had quite a case of success there for a while.
Yeah, I was going to say, to use a phrase that's been coined a lot, you made beautiful music together.
Oh, you know what? I love it that you said that. I love it. You know, that saying or that axiom really, really comes into its full meaning when you apply it to Glenn and myself, because I miss him now, and it's not something that I'm going to dwell on while we're here on the air together. But you know, there's a big musical part of me that's gone, because Glenn would do things like stand behind me and watch me play the piano, and he could make the same noises come out of the guitar that I was making on the piano. And the piano and the guitar are like two instruments that don't really like each other very much. And the fact that he was able to create those voicings by just watching me play and by listening, it put us in the same musical world where politics, where we were hopelessly divided. He loved Bob Hope and he loved John Wayne, and he was really an Orange County Republican, and he played golf. And I hated golf. And I was to the left, definitely to the left, and wanted to be perceived as a member of my own generation, which included Harry Nilsson and Warren Zevon and Randy Newman and all these guys. And yet, I was never so comfortable musically as when I was in Glenn's company. He really was a musical genius.
Well, and you hear that when you two recorded together, when you listen to him, you listen to the arrangements, and you know, for me, it's like he most fully speaks your songs, your music. I mean, I've heard lots of other people do your stuff, and they've done beautiful arrangements of them, but he somehow seemed to get you.
He got me. He got me. He got the chords. You know, there's a joke going around Nashville. There's a saying down there about country music that it's just three chords and the truth. And they say, except for Jimmy Webb, he's 12 chords and the truth. You know, but Glenn got the chords. He loved chords. He loved the musicality of my writing. And how lucky was I, Bonnie, to find this guy? And you know, the sense of loss is you know, it's profound. But you know, he faced his illness and really all the challenges of life with such a, you know, unmitigated enthusiasm and will to triumph over whatever obstacle was put in front of him.
There was such a dignity about
yeah.
him, I found, even when, you know, when he was younger. And, you know, in his full steam, there was just this sort of aura of dignity I always felt about
him. I learned a lot from him because I was a kind of raw kid. And when I got to L.A., I was off the leash there for a while. I mean, I had a lot of money and a lot of spare time, you know. And in a way, he would, you know, pull on my leash every once in a while and say, you know, you didn't have to do that, or you know, he believed in speaking plainly. He didn't believe in jiving anyone around, which was very unusual in Hollywood, I have to say. And I live in the East, and I'm not down on it. Listen, I had the California dream. I mean, I had it. I loved it. I loved everything about California, and it gave me everything it had to give. And so there's a love affair there that will never ever go away, but there was a decidedly a lack of directness in business matters and projects that just went on for ages and ages and ages until they sort of like died of exhaustion. It was not an East Coast way, or even a Northern United States way of doing business. It was a kind, I call it the manana syndrome, you know. And he was, on the other hand, very deadly serious about getting things done, getting them done on time. I remember when he called me one afternoon from the studio and said, I need a follow-up for By the Time I Get to Phoenix. Can you write it for me? And I said, now? And he said, well, he said, we're in the studio. And I said, well, okay. And I started writing. And you don't really get any awards in songwriting for how fast you write a song. But by 5 or 6 that afternoon, I had written Wichita Lineman, even though it wasn't finished. And I sent it over to the studio to Al DeLore and Glenn, I think Gold Star, one of those places, Western. Didn't hear anything about it for a couple of weeks, and ran into Glenn just somewhere. It seems like it was out on the street in front of a record company, and said, oh, hey, I guess you guys didn't really like Wichita Lineman, huh? You know, songwriters are used to thinking. It's no big deal when somebody turns down your song. You take it in stride. And he said, oh, you mean Wichita Lineman? And I said, yeah. He said, we cut that. And I said, you did? I said, well, you know, it wasn't finished, Glenn. And he said, it is now.
So Wichita Lineman, what we know as that song, as far as you were concerned at the time, it wasn't done.
I thought maybe it needed another verse, but they were calling me every 15 minutes and asking me if it was done yet. And so finally, I just kind of, in a fit of frustration, I sent it over there because I had 2 verses. So they took it. And when you hear it now, you'll hear him play that big guitar solo with that Duane Eddy sound. And they just filled up the hole and put it on the record.
And a classic was born, my goodness.
Well, you know, it really was. And now you wouldn't quite know what to do with the song if there was any more to it. It certainly didn't need anything. And I think that's what Glenn contributed to me. In many cases, I would have taken it another step and ruined the whole thing. And he just had, as you say, a kind of reticence, a dignity about his playing and his music. He didn't think it needed any more words, and he got it.
And he was right.
Yes, he was.
You're out performing. Like you say, you love to perform. You've been out on tour. You're coming here. What is it like for you to perform these songs that are yours but are inextricably linked to someone like Glenn or to someone else who covered it?
Well, Artie Garfunkel, for instance, mm-hmm. who All I Know, and it was his first release after the big breakup with Simon and Garfunkel. And so there was a lot of pressure on that moment. But the truth is, to answer the question, is if I think about what I'm doing, which is I'm sitting on a stage and I'm singing this song that Glenn Campbell recorded, and he's not here anymore, but the song is still here and I'm still here. If I actually think about it, I think I would break down and cry. And so when I'm performing, I'm performing. It's a different state. It's a mental state. It's an alpha state where you go out and you concentrate. And most performers, I think, would agree with me. You really concentrate on the material and getting each song across as well as you can with the gifts that God has given you. And within those boundaries, there's a safe place on stage where you're not really very emotional about what's going on. However emotional the audience may be, and sometimes they'll be sobbing and crying, and I'm aware that they're doing it, which is why a lot of the times I'm joking around on stage. I mean, there's a lot of laughter. I don't want to leave the wrong impression. It's not like a wake, but you create a sort of a magic circle to perform in. But every once in a while, an errant thought will be, you know, I remember that day that Glenn and I went over to Manuel's and we both bought rhinestone cowboy jackets, you know? And that thought will be there, and all of a sudden my voice will start shaking and I will have to make an effort to sing through that and actually not sob or cry during the performance. That's just not professional. And I think that if some people saw you doing that, they might misunderstand and say that, you know, you're acting, that you're really pouring on the, you know, the schmaltz. So sometimes I think it's kind of a delicate balance of getting too involved with your own material. I don't think it's as difficult for pure singers who do a lot of repertoire by different people. But the songs are so personal, and there are so many memories attached to each one, you know, and including Mr. Sinatra, who was extremely kind to me. And I can be quite emotional, and that's something I have to watch on stage just for the sake of the audience.
Well, it comes out in your songwriting. It's that ability to be in the moment with your emotions, I think, that makes your song so powerful.
Well, thank you. You know, I'm very, very lucky. I'm a kid who prayed, I actually prayed, for God to let me grow up. When I was 14, I was driving a tractor out in the middle of a wheat field in the panhandle of Oklahoma. It was an International Harvester tractor, and I was plowing the wheat under so they could plant some more wheat. It was this limitless horizon, flat as a pool table out there for 50 miles. And I had my little transistor radio swinging from my umbrella on my tractor, and I'm driving along, and I hear this guy come on and saying, I go, "Who is that?" And at the end of the time, they said, "Brand new record by Glenn Campbell on Crest Records," you know. Turn around, look at me, and I stopped that tractor and went home, borrowed the car, and drove to Beaver, Oklahoma, which was 22 miles away. They had a record store there, and bought Turn Around, Look at Me by Glenn Campbell. And that night, I got down on my knees by my bed. This is a true story. And I prayed to God. I said, "Please, Lord, let me write a song just half as good as Turn Around, Look at Me. And if it's not too much to ask, let me meet Glenn Campbell." Now, this was a prayer that I lofted, you know, in the general direction of heaven when I was 14 years old. When I was 19 years old, I had a hit record with By the Time I Get to Phoenix. So it took 5 years to get from the wide open spaces of nowhere to Hollywood to the place where Glenn Campbell was, and to get the song to him in the biggest crapshoot of all time, which is the record business, and turn my card over and see Glenn's picture on it and watch that record go to, you know, the top of the charts. There's something about it, all of it, that is just... It was unreal at the time. Sometimes I still wake up and think, oh, this is odd. I'm going out tonight, and I'm going to play for a bunch of really nice people. I'm going to play my songs. And now I'm, you know, now I'm not as young as I used to be. I've written a lot of songs. But somehow or other, I got from the panhandle of Oklahoma to that first record with Glenn Campbell, and I think that prayer was answered.
I was going to say, somebody was listening.
Yeah.
And we are all so fortunate that that happened.
Well, you're so kind.
It's only the truth. It is only the truth. Looking at the list of your songs, like I said, so many of the bands and musicians and people that I cared about, and, you know, music was so important. As it is for so many kids, you know, it's a way to kind of express the stuff you have no words for yet, you have no understanding of yet, and we are lucky.
Yes, I'd just like to add to that. I think it's at the time when your emotions are at their most intense, and you seem somehow unable to articulate any of it, and it's just overpowering. And in my case, it came out as music. So in a way, it was your release as a listener to hear the music, but it was really my release to write the music.
Well, and now to perform it, and we are so looking forward to having you here on the PAP stage. It is going to be fantastic to hear you in concert, Mr. Jimmy Webb. It has been such an honor talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Jimmy Webb performs Thursday night at the Pabst Theater. There is more information at WUWM.com.